Thank you, Phil. Good afternoon. I will be discussing vaccination coverage in 19 to 35-month-old children in Puerto Rico and some very interesting results we found when we compared series coverage to household telephone service. We had two main objectives for our study. First was to assess vaccination coverage in 19 to 35-month-old children in Puerto Rico. Our second objective was to assess the feasibility of inclusion of Puerto Rico in the National Immunization Survey by examining coverage in this age group by type of phone service available in the household. So here we have Puerto Rico. It is a U.S. territory in the Caribbean to the east of the Dominican Republic and to the west of the U.S. Virgin Islands. In 2008, its population was estimated to be at about 3.9 million. The island is divided into 9 health districts through which health services are provided, and 70% of children are eligible for the government health insurance plan. Nearly all children receive their vaccines at public health clinics, and in order to facilitate the delivery of vaccines to children in Puerto Rico receives federal support through the Vaccines for Children program and 317 funding. So before discussing vaccination coverage in Puerto Rico, I will discuss some about how the CDC assesses immunization coverage in the United States, which we already got some information from during Karen's presentation. And in the US, we use the National Immunization Survey. It's a landline-based telephone survey with a target population of 19 to 35-month-olds. Consent is obtained to collect provider-reported dates of vaccination, which are used to calculate coverage. And other surveys conducted by the CDC use the NIS's sampling frame. In contrast, the Puerto Rico Immunization Program assesses coverage in preschool-age children annually using the Puerto Rico Immunization Survey. A sample of children 35 months of age is drawn from birth records in each of the 9 health districts, and immunization data are collected for each child. A vaccination coverage estimate is calculated for each of the 9 health districts, and an unweighted overall estimate for Puerto Rico is obtained as well. And using this method, very few children are lost to follow-up. To get a clearer picture of immunization coverage in Puerto Rico, in 2006, CDC, in collaboration with the University of Puerto Rico and the Puerto Rico Immunization Program, conducted a household immunization survey. A multi-stage cluster survey design was used, and systematic random sampling was used to select a sample of households from 60 clusters. Interviews were conducted for all children aged 1, 2, and 6 years old in selected households, and consent was obtained to review medical records for immunization data. So the key variables in our study were date of birth, provider-reported vaccination dates, which were obtained either through the medical chart and/or the immunization registry, telephone household service, where we had a variable for both landline coverage and cell phone coverage, and household income. We conducted a weighted analysis on a total of 315 children 19 to 35 months of age from 286 households. And we calculated antigen-specific coverage, as well as coverage for the 43133 series. In addition to this, we calculated up-to-date status for the series by type of phone service in the household and by household income. Some key demographic characteristics I would like to highlight. Among the 286 households in our sample, only 45% of households had a landline telephone. And this is important to note because if we were to include Puerto Rico in the National Immunization Survey, only 45% of the population could potentially be sampled if our estimate is representative of the population. Also, 12% of households in our sample have no phone service. A large percentage of households, 41%, have a yearly income of less than $5,000. And while most of the children were identified racially as white, about 27% were identified as other, and other included various mixed race categories. Last, Nearly all of our children were born in Puerto Rico, which indicates that not many children had migrated into Puerto Rico from other locations in our study sample. So across the board, coverage was high for individual vaccines. The Healthy People 2010 target for coverage for individual vaccines is 90%. And in our sample, coverage for polio, MMR, and hepatitis B vaccine met this target. Coverage for DTaP, Hib, and Varicella did not meet the 90% target, and DTaP had the lowest coverage among all of the vaccines, with coverage at 78%. For the 4-3-1-3-3 series, which is defined as up-to-date coverage for 4 or more doses of DTaP, 3 or more doses of polio, 1 or more doses of MMR, 3 or more doses of Hib, and 3 or more doses of Hep B, coverage was 75%, and this was below the Healthy People 2010 target of 80% coverage for the series. So next we decided to examine vaccination coverage for the series by household telephone service to assess the feasibility of including Puerto Rico in the National Immunization Survey. As you can see, lowest coverage was observed in households with landline telephone coverage, and this struck us as interesting because households with landline service are typically more affluent and would be more likely to have higher vaccination coverage than less affluent households. So to make better sense of why landline coverage was the lowest, we took a look at series coverage by household income, and we saw an even greater disparity in vaccination coverage. Household coverage in the highest income group had significantly lower coverage than households in the lowest income grouping. And we were initially puzzled by this and decided to take a look at telephone coverage by income to determine whether those children living in households with landlines were also those in the highest income category. So we found that 41% of children in households with a landline were also households in the highest income category. And households with cell phone, 42% of households with cell phone only, and 71% of households with no phones were in the lowest income category. And these were the households where children had the highest vaccination coverage. So to summarize our results, we found that half of all households in our sample had no landline telephone service, and more than 10% of households had no phone service. 75% of the 19 to 35 month olds were up to date for the 4-3-1-3-3 series. And we saw that children living in households with landline telephones and in the highest income category had lower coverage than children without landlines and in the lower income groups. We think it's probable that higher income is the underlying factor contributing to the low coverage among landline households that we observed. So at this point in our study, we drew on the expertise of the Puerto Rico Immunization Program to try to determine why we were seeing these results and why households in the higher income categories had the lowest coverage. So we learned that a barrier exists to preventing higher income children from being fully immunized, and this is a vaccine storage law in Puerto Rico that came into effect in 2003 that required providers apply for certification to store vaccines. This was an expensive and slow process, and so many providers stopped administering vaccines. This affected children in the higher income groups who would be more likely to go to private providers for health services. So the immunization program provided special vaccination clinics in order to provide vaccines for these children, but in 2007, activities had to be cut due to a drop in 317 funding. So it's possible that coverage today may be even lower than the result shown because these services are no longer available. So there are some limitations to our study. Data were missing from 4 of the 60 clusters. Also, we were unable to determine eligibility and refusal rates. Another limitation was that during the data collection phase, household interviewers did not have access to some gated communities and apartment buildings, which would generally contain higher income residents. So our coverage could be overestimated because we did not include a representative sample of high income residents. Also, the medical records used to obtain vaccination information may be incomplete. And last, our data are several years old and thus may not be representative of vaccination coverage today. In conclusion, we learned that coverage for DTaP, Hib, and Varicella did not meet the Healthy People 2010 target of 90%, and coverage for the 43133 series at 75% did not meet the 80% target. Lower coverage in higher income and landline households is consistent with observations following the new law for vaccine storage. And also, coverage is likely overestimated due to the inability to reach some higher income households, and coverage today is possibly even lower due to the cutting of special immunization events for those whose providers no longer administer vaccines. We recommend that to improve coverage, the barriers preventing private providers from storing and administering vaccines should be reduced. To improve local assessment capacity, the immunization registry should be strengthened so that there's one record for every child and a record for every vaccine administered. And also, the annual birth certificate survey methodology should be modified to produce weighted estimates. The next steps for us are to complete additional analysis on this data. We plan to compare coverage for six-year-olds at 35 months of age to the 19 to 35-month-olds to assess the impacts of the vaccine storage law. And ultimately, we will need to conduct another household survey to get current estimates. As the data show, a telephone survey could be problematic due to low landline coverage. And next time around, we would need greater access to affluent households to obtain a better sample, and efforts must be made to increase data quality and relevance of the data collected to the immunization program. And I'd like to thank all of the people that were involved in the collection and analysis of the data and providing guidance. Thank you.
Jennifer, they were really interesting results that showed the high income people had lower coverage. You know, it's just something we always seem to forget, that it really cost these providers, these private providers, a lot of money just to participate in these vaccination efforts. You know, it's really remarkable. At this point, I want to open up the floor for questions. And when you go to the microphone, please state your name and your affiliation, and ask your question slowly. Thank you.
I'm Melanie Mazoon. I'm with Kelsey Siebold Clinic in Houston, Texas, and I'm a private provider. I have a question for Mr. Robeson. I think there's an assumption in the way you presented your data that I just want to clarify and see if you really made this assumption in your work, and that is the assumption is that a provider who didn't catch a child up at that visit missed an opportunity, even if they administered shots, because there are shots, there are times you can't catch a child up. If they're missing two DTPs, you can't catch them up at that visit. They need a waiting period. If it's not been 6 months since DTP number three, you can't give them DTP number four. And there are many other examples where it's impossible to catch a child up. And so I just wanted to know if you were able to you know, tease that out of your data.
Thank you for that. That is a limitation, and that's right. Kids get so far behind, you can't catch them up. And in this analysis, on our first cut through it, we didn't look at that. We were more concerned where they were having encounters without any shots being given at all. On our first pass through, that's more of analysis that we'll work on next time we look at this data. And we have a new data set in conjunction with our Oregon Health Plan partners we're going to look at, where we actually have a lot more coding and a lot more detail. But that is a good point.
My name is David Yankee. I work at the assessment branch with Dr. Phil Smith. My question goes to Mr. Robeson. I thought you did a very good job, and since you have a lot of detailed information when it comes to data collection, I was intrigued by what you did. So I was thinking about the fact that if you had a family which had more than one child. And they were up to date, like the 32% you were talking about. What was the link to the fact that the other kids that follow will also be up to date and they wouldn't be missed? Did you try to look into that, or do you have plans in looking into that?
Hold on a sec. A little hard of hearing. I'm getting an echo off here that makes it hard to read. Can someone help me with an not hearing?
There's a lot of echo in this room.
Yeah.
I'm
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, like my question is, if there's a family, if the first child is up to date, what happens to the other children that followed? Were they also up to date or not?
No, we didn't look at family history and composition, and it's fascinating to do that because first kids and second kids in our data, you know, just anecdotally when we look at it, I can tell you they look different. And also we do see some patterns of race and ethnicity that come into play on this too. But we haven't looked at that really at any length yet.
Okay, thank you.
But it is something we will look at in the future.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just noticed that all the speakers are oriented so that you'll hear what we say, but it's really hard for us to hear what you're saying, even if you're at the speakers, because they're pointing back at you. So try to speak more loudly, and we'll...
Well, part of that's I'm partially deaf, and everyone's too far away to actually look at anyone's lips moving.
You so just don't listen, you're not deaf.
I guess my first question is for Steve. Do you see the use of the V15 code, which allows a provider to document the under-immunized status, being a huge benefit for those of us trying to decide whether our patients are going to, or whether it's an active choice or a passive choice in becoming behind in vaccination status? That, and is there any program to facilitate, to help the providers use that code more appropriately? And the second question is, with the advent of people using cell phones in the United States as a replacement of landlines, what's the plan to integrate that new shifting paradigm in the U.S. to the VIS for the next level of when we look at how our children are vaccinated? Because in the military, we're finding that our young parents are not maintaining landlines at all, regardless of whether they're officer enlisted. They're maintaining cell phones, and so that's a huge issue that we need to look at when it comes to our patients' assessment.
So we know we've had a lot of trouble hearing that with the echo up here.
We get about three echoes back here. I can't hear it.
I'm hoping that our partners in the Oregon Health Plan will strongly want to see that used in the future, but we want to look at more documentation. I think the real answer is if they can find some way to bill us for counseling parents and the time they spend with them when they have issues and doubts about vaccination, we might see a little pickup on that too.
Yes, our branch actually is in doing some research right now, looking at alternatives to the current landline situation. We've done some experiments through NORC, they may be still here, that have done some experiments with cell phones, and we're looking at the American Community Survey as an alternative sampling frame for the NIS. So we've got some things in plan that we're looking at right now to determine if at some point we need to modify the current design of the NIS. So yes, we are looking into that.
Please try to speak off mic and try to reach us. Or if you'd like to, just come to this speaker. Yeah. That'd be better for us. We get about three echoes up here.
And we don't really mean to make barriers to asking immunization questions.
Here.
Well, if we look at the health insurance question that we asked, which we look at whether they have any type of health insurance, which includes private and public insurance. So that's our VFC program. And that health insurance was determined to be an important predictor. But when we look at that among certain populations, for example, children of working mothers, income wasn't a major factor, although it obviously is playing a role in the fact that the mothers are working, which means they may have access to insurance. So insurance, in that sense, wasn't as important as those other factors. But as it on its own, looking at that in terms of the demographic factors we looked at, it was the only factor that came that was determined to be a predictor on its own. So yes. In terms of free vaccines, that's what the insurance would do.
But vaccines for children, they don't have to have insurance, though.
Right.
Well, they have to have access to the insurance, to the vaccine. If they don't have health insurance, they have to have access, which would be through our VFC program. So children have access to health insurance, to the vaccines. Is that what you're getting at? I'm not sure if I'm answering your question well. Well, what we're finding is even among children who aren't who don't have health insurance, some of them are vaccinated. So they have other means of getting vaccinated.